Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. Welcome back to Destroy All Culture, this is episode 123. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
That is a me.
Hey!
Hey, it's a me, Aiden Morgan.
It's a you, a Mario. You know, apparently Mario's father is named... Mario. Mario and Luigi, their last name is Mario?
That's what I heard. Yeah. Mario, and Luigi Mario.
Yeah, it makes me angry. But not as angry as something else, which I know we have a lot to get through. And just to warn people, we have like four big things we want to cover today.
Yes.
I don't know that we're going to get to all four.
But we'll do our best.
I'm going to make it harder.
Okay.
And do something else first that I forgot to tell you about.
Oh.
That will hopefully be quick.
Okay.
So went to this cake concert the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I thought it was just a cake concert. I didn't look too hard at the tickets, and then one of my friends who was going with us, because it was, I got tickets for, like, me and some friends as, like, a Christmas gift. And they were like, oh, who's opening? And I go to look, and I realize that there's this radio station in town, and this is their, like, Christmas jingle jam, you know, like, holiday party thing.
Right.
Except it's also, like, the 50th anniversary of the radio station.
Oh.
Which, I mean, it's fine. You know, what, it's just, like, instead of, like, a merch table, they were having, like, silent auctions, and, you know, various DJs from the radio station were coming up between acts type of thing.
Okay.
And something like half the crowd worked at the radio station. Like, they all had, like, staff badges.
Right.
And there were a bunch of them that looked like just, like, I don't know, they're just, like, this clutch of blondes. They seemed to be multiplying every time we looked. It was very weird. Anyway. We missed the first opening act, just because life got away from everyone.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just like, traffic and dinner delays and everything. So, whatever. Second act comes on, and I didn't know that I'm not going to name the band. People can look this up and figure it out if they want, but I don't feel like shaming them quite that much. But I looked them up before on YouTube, and I happened to listen to like a song, and I was like, they're not bad, you know. They're doing kind of like Southern rock type of thing. It's like a guitar, a bass player, and a guy who is, and this is kind of actually weirdly obnoxious, because you're an opening act, right? You have like, you're doing like six songs.
Right.
And like the first like four of them, like he did electric guitar, and then like he brought out like a slide guitar, and then he was playing just harmonica. I'm like, just settle down. But like apparently they're opening for Bob Seger in February, so they're like a bigger band than I would think, you know.
Right.
And then they announced they're doing their last, you know, song of the year before they go, because they've like, you know, done all these shows all year, like over like 200 shows and blah, blah, blah. And they did a cover of Sabotage.
Okay.
Except they tried to change it to like a Southern rock type song.
This is what I was thinking was happening, and I'm trying to figure out how that would sound.
Terrible. Like, apparently my face was enough to, like, make the people I was with just burst out laughing. And I was just like, I had not scheduled literal blasphemy on my calendar. Like, I didn't put that in. But I was so angry. Like, we were on the floor. We couldn't get seats. We were standing, you know, on the floor. And I was like, we were actually, like, 20 feet from the curtain to kind of loop around and go backstage. And, like, when they finished, I was like, I need to borrow, like, a folding chair and I'll be right back. Like, I need to have some words. So that was horrific. And what has been heard cannot be unheard, is all I'm saying.
I understand.
It scarred me. Anyway, getting back to all the stuff we actually meant to talk about.
Right. I thought you were going to tell me that it was like, you thought you were going to a concert to see the band Cake, and it turned out to be like actual, just a, like a show like featuring like delicious cakes.
I was upset actually that the you know, bar and all that, like they weren't serving cake. I wanted to get some cake.
Yeah.
They would not give this to me. also, I did realize, like, I've been listening to Cake since the 90s, right? Like,
right. So how was actual Cake?
They were great. I mean, they were absolutely great. It was a little strange in two different ways. The first way was, I hadn't thought about it, but like, I've been listening since like the you know, like 93 or so. And they were in their 20s, and I hadn't thought about it. I've never seen them like visually since, like, you know, some press photos, but I'd never seen them live. So I wasn't expecting like these like 50-year-old dads to come on the stage.
That's how that goes.
Right. It was just really weirdly shocking for like a second. I was just like, oh, oh God, they're old. That means I'm old. Oh shit. Wait, hold on. What am I doing? And then I thought about the sabotage thing and got angry all over again. Anyway.
That was like when I saw Eddie Vedder like just a few years ago. And it was he looks like he's been fixing my car for the last 20 years or something. Like he's just come out from underneath the car to go, okay, time to put on a show. Anyway.
But no, I mean, they were good. The interesting thing was because I've never heard them live. Like I realized I've never even heard like a live clip. Mm.
Right.
Really. And, you know, they're so like weirdly mathematical precise on their recordings.
Mm-hmm.
That having them do it live, it pushes it like 2 to 3 degrees off.
Hmm.
And it's fine. Like, they're human beings. I don't expect. But just because they're so ridiculously tight on their, produced recordings, that it was a little strange to be like, they are human.
Fair enough.
Anyway, because we have a lot of shit to get through today, if we want to. So, where do you want to start?
Let's start with Elseworlds.
All right. What'd you think? We had the big crossover.
This one, I mean, it was funny. Like you could not having Legends in it, kind of, in this version of this year's crossover, kind of, it made it a little less cluttered, but at the same time, the scope felt a bit reduced from the Crisis on Earth X crossover from the year before.
Yes.
And but frankly, that was fine with me.
Yeah, I liked it as, and I felt like they kind of shortchanged Supergirl.
They didn't. Yeah, it was weird.
Because was like a character piece on Ollie and Barry.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to have less to do with Supergirl this time around. I mean, they kind of gave her like a moment with like the Alex Danvers of that Earth.
Right.
But it didn't quite land because this was a character that we actually didn't really know, and so it didn't quite made her moment about somebody else, which was just weird.
Well, I mean, they put her as sort of the early in the first part, you have that bit where you realize kind of what they're doing, right? And that they're discussing why they all do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the whole, like, you know, Ollie does this to make up for, like, past sins and all this. And you know, Barry does this because of his family. And it's like, Karen does it because it's the right thing. And that's it. And it's not a bad thing at all, but it just kind of makes her this safe pivot point that everyone else can revolve around in the crossover. But it gives her nothing to really do.
Right.
But moving past that, yeah, I thought the Batwoman stuff was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see what they do when they actually have time to focus on the character some.
Yeah, because I felt like they didn't like, and the interviews I read with Ruby Rose and when she was describing the character, it did not match at all what we got. So I'm thinking that maybe
when they do
when they do the pilot, we're gonna get more of the Kate Kane as a Bruce Wayne analog.
Right.
Than we're seeing there. Because, I mean, quite a bit. I mean, she just kind of, a lot of it was her just kind of standing there. Oh, I was just going to say, I really, really enjoyed the sort of the action scenes with her. I thought she really sort of nailed this take where she's kind of as still as possible, but as lethal as possible.
Right.
That was great.
Yeah, no, I think it worked, and it worked weirdly as an echo of Barry and Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything in this crossover had to be somehow related to them.
Right.
For good or bad. But, yeah, no, I also, Stephen Amell is fucking funny when he needs to be.
Which is not something I ever thought would happen.
Right! I mean, I'm like, God damn it, you guys are wasting him. Over on Arrow, like, you should be doing more funny shit. Are you puffing out your chest? Yes. Yeah. You know, just like, I also like that they solved the Batman issue in like, that Earth. Because they've referenced Gotham before, they've referenced Bruce Wayne. And you're like, well, okay, so on the Arrow, you know, Earth 1, the Arrow Flash world, is there a Batman or not? And if there is, then why have they never mentioned this? And why is Oliver like, I started this whole thing? And I love that it's just that he just insists that it was him. He's like, Batman isn't real. I was the first. Shut up.
Yeah, I love the whole, yeah, he's an urban myth. Everybody knows it. I'm like, oh,
and like, he's the only one who believes that. It's perfect.
Yeah. I thought a good, an elegant and funny little character-based solution.
Yes. And of course, I think part of why they're doing this, in terms of why they focus so hard on the Ollie Berry thing specifically, is, and why they started to build the Supergirl Batgirl thing, even though they did very, very quickly, obviously, is because they flat out said what next year's crossover is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, hell, why not bring in Crisis on, you know, Infinite Earths?
They've been teasing it forever, and they're just like, we're going to do it. What made me sit up and notice weirdly was they said fall 2019. And I'm sorry, but the crossovers take place winter. I mean, technically it's fall, but it's winter. And I'm like, are they going to be seeding this? Oh, they should be. All year across all the shows?
I hope so.
Right, like just little appearances of the Monitor here and there, just slowly building things up. But also, you know, the whole Ollie's deal thing, I think this is the end of Amell and Green Arrow.
Oh, maybe.
Because traditionally, of course, you know, like Barry and Kara die in Crisis.
Yeah.
Which I did like that they kind of teased that in this, and then they found their perfectly in-character out. Which is, if Ollie makes this deal, that it's him instead. Like, not only this time, but, you know, going forward, like, the next time that he'll, you know, die in this thing. That this is how we can keep Flash Supergirl going and still do Crisis.
Yeah, okay, this makes sense.
I am also thinking they are finally going to pull the trigger and merge, at the very least, Supergirl. My guess is also Black Lightning.
Yeah, I was wondering what they're going to do with Black Lightning, because, I mean, it's been its own thing for its duration.
Right.
So they have to sort of bring it in somehow.
Yeah, I mean, and I hope Legends survives it, but we'll see. But here's the interesting thing, is if they start a Batgirl series next fall, and they're like, well, we have to do everything, right? Because we're going to loop in Black Lightning and all this. Suddenly we have a 6-show event.
Ye gods.
And that's right for Crisis.
Yeah.
Because after Crisis, like, if you get rid of Arrow, right? You can have, a World's Finest type of Batwoman-Supergirl crossover. Sometimes you bring in the Flash, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you bring in whatever Legends is, or whatever the new show after Legends is. You know, and you have way more moving... You don't have to do big six-piece things ever again.
Right.
You know, or you do, like, every 3 or 4 years type of thing. And then you do smaller, little, teeny group ones. God only knows, but it makes sense. Which is, of course, no indicator of actually doing anything in Hollywood. But I am excited that they're going to do Legends. What do you think of Lois?
Oh, Bitsy Tulloch as Lois Lane. I loved the Lois that they had. She is grown up, which is really nice.
Yeah,
like an actual adult Lois Lane is wonderful to see. She had that sort of funny, scrappy energy that Margot Kidder brought to the movies.
Yeah.
Which I also quite liked. The only thing I wished was that we'd had more of Superman and, you know, Clark and Lois.
Yeah.
I thought, like, the scenes with them, and I mean, it was a testament to how sort of good they were that they managed to, you know, sell us on a storyline where, you know, you find out she's pregnant and then he proposes. And it works, even though they're never on the show and you don't know these characters. Although, technically, you do know these characters.
That's the thing, right? It's like everyone knows the character, so you can just do it.
Yeah, but it's I thought it was kind of daring that they did it and that they did it so well.
Also, of course, it has to be mentioned, two things I think we need to mention here. One is that after all this time, we finally got the bathroom answer for the cells.
That was
in Flash.
I love that so hard. I was actually looking at them. That's what I was thinking. I always think that when I see people in the cells. But then I was looking at Barry, like, you know, Barry and Oliver, and I'm like, sooner or later, one of them is going to start complaining about the lack of a toilet. And right on cue, it was great.
So yeah, that was delightful that, like, they finally, and just Barry's whole, like, of course we do, what's wrong with you? Was just adorable. But of course, the other thing that was funny was that in the big end fight when, you know, Lois and Martian Manhunter and Brainiac show up, she has this hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And there was instantly this debate of, like, what hammer is that?
Yeah, because I had no idea. I'm like,
right, well, no one did, and they didn't name it, and it could have been any number of things. Right? Like, it could have been some design off of, like, either the John Henry Iron Steel character or the Natasha Iron Steel character, which it looked a little bit more like her hammer than his, et cetera. The showrunner of Supergirl actually finally admitted what it was, which I think is fascinating and gives and tells me, weirdly, I think, one of the future crossovers.
Oh, interesting.
Bizarrely enough. That was, for the record, the solar hammer that goes with the cosmic anvil. Which is a jumble of words.
Yes.
But if you've ever read All-Star Superman...
Yes, I have.
Right. That's, you know, the anvil and the hammer, what he uses to break apart atoms to form miniature suns to feed his little pocket universe.
Right.
And it ties into Solaris.
Hmm.
Now, there was, in the 90s, a DC crossover event called Blackest Night.
I have a vague memory of that.
Which is when Solaris, who's the Sun Eater, comes by and tries to eat the sun. This involves a whole lot of Green Lantern bullshit and all, but you can do it without that. But I'm like, okay, so we're gonna get, like, some form of Blackest Night. Like, we're gonna get fucking Solaris up here some year soon. Because there's no reason to bring in that and never name it.
Right.
Other than, we're gonna have a use for this eventually? It might be a couple years?
We may not have any concrete plans, but it's there, so we can...
Right,
we
and like that, because it leads directly... It opens the door, like, perfectly for an eventual crossover. It's like, that's a great drop.
Nice. So maybe, like, the 2020 crossover will be...
That's what I was kind of thinking. Like, you go, you know, you do, like, the huge crisis thing, and then you do, okay, well, now the sun's being eaten.
That seems like a problem.
Yeah. I also wonder if they're doing the whole, like, Lois is pregnant bit... If we're going to see the next time we see the Legion and this, the whole crisis thing and the fact that Nora is in the Legion and that there's a Legion on Earth 38 and they seem to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't had any visual proof of this, but it's really leading me down that road of what I've always thought. So I think I've mentioned before that, like, the Legion exists post world merge.
Oh.
And there's just one Legion and they're just not telling anyone because they can't.
Right.
But if we're not going to eventually see Superboy in the Legion of Superheroes, but with Jonathan Kent.
Oh.
Yeah. Because if they did that at all, then in Crisis, you have the, you know, well, maybe Lois hasn't given birth, maybe she has whatever, but then their teenage son comes back with a team to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be awesome.
I agree.
So... Again, who knows, but they've planted a whole lot for the future.
Yeah, no, I'm yeah, as soon as I saw that they were doing... Well, I mean, as soon as I saw the monitor, I thought, okay, this means that Crisis, like, Infinite Earths is in the mix, right? But then they announced it. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, really. I was just like, oh, dang.
I was like, oh, I guess this means we get Psycho Pirate.
Which we do.
Which we do. And I didn't realize who that was at the end at first. And then I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, no, the minute he picked up that mask in part two, it was like, huh.
See, when he picked up the mask in part two and I saw that, it didn't click who that was. And then at the end when he's in the cells of Dr. D.
And he says the infamous words.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course Dr. D is Dr. Destiny.
Yes.
Which is why they changed his face, because he looks more like the classic Dr. Destiny now.
Yep.
But it was actually funny. When he first picked up the mask, I had that moment. Oh, I thought it might be a Court of Owls mask.
Hmm.
From the Batman thing. And I'm like, well, that would make sense to use that for Batwoman, because it's rounded like one of those. But it's not quite the right shape. And I'm like, no, that's a... Oh. Because they kept saying the word crisis.
Nope, that's kind of exciting. I was like, that's pretty good.
But outside of the crossover,
outside of that.
Oh, also, actually, wait, no, before, because Legends weren't part of the crossover except for one weird bit that that they have refused to explain. Because Gary, when we're in the whole merge, like everyone's even, Gary is the bartender.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: is if you pause it, you know he has a bunch of buttons on his shirt.
Yeah.
One of them is the Time Bureau badge.
Huh.
So was Gary like eyeing this? Like, was he on a mission? Were they like shit's going weird? Well, because again, we'll just dip into Legends for a second, then we'll get there for real. But they mention that there are all these calls, right?
Right.
While Time is screwed up. Over in Legends. And it's like, did the Bureau just send Gary to go figure out what was going on? Because they've done that.
Yeah.
But it's like, Legends was part of this. They were just like, should we do something? But busy with their own shit, and then it was fixed.
Right.
Which is hysterical.
I just figured they couldn't resist putting Gary in the show.
But like, it would make no real sense to anyone who doesn't watch Legends. But just giving him the Time Bureau pin is like, oh no, Gary was just faking. Like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, and they've so far everyone involved in the show has just been like, we don't know what to talk about. Shut up. Which means that they meant it, and it was just a fun drop. But speaking actually of Legends. Holy shit, that was a fucking episode, wasn't it?
There's a hard pass on the crossover. Yeah, I don't I don't know.
Oliver owes me $20. You can barely hear it.
I don't quite know where to start with that episode because it was like they took like 2 or 3 years worth of like ideas they probably had scribbled on a wall somewhere and said, let's just put everything in. Let's just do all the bizarre crap we wanted to do, but, you know, had to adhere to some kind of sense. But now we don't. So, and I'm not sure which alternate version of the Legends I like the most. I mean, Puppets of Tomorrow was, of course, incredibly funny. What were the others? There was Custodians of the Chronology,
which was based off of Airwolf. And then, of course, Sirens of Space-Time, which was a Charlie's Angels joke.
Right, of course, yeah.
But I love that they sat there and produced opening credits for all three shows.
Yes.
And that, weirdly, in all three shows, like, when they go back in time, they're like, oh, this. Like, somehow, like, Zari seems to be watching the credits at some point?
Yeah.
Well, that's, it's like the really ongoing weird joke of, like, okay, they can talk to the cat, too. Like, what? And I did point out to someone because I was who did that, like, wait, they can talk cat? And I'm like, yeah, they can also talk pig. And I was like, you know what? If this happened on the TARDIS, you wouldn't even question it.
Exactly.
Which is what I think the joke that they're going for is, just shut up. Just shut up.
I think that the other thing that this episode does, and this has been done in previous episodes, but they might give them more of a reason to bring Gideon. Like, to use the actual actor,
right,
on the show more often, and maybe I was like, if they wanted to make Gideon a physical character and not just a voice on the Waverider, that would be this would be a perfect way to bring her in.
Yeah, I mean, even if they just have her hologram just be her.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't have to have her as a physical member of Charlie's Angels. But yeah, holy shit. That and here's the thing, is that, like, they were having the silliest episode of Legends that I think they could come up with.
Yes.
And in the middle of it, they also managed to do one of the best Constantine stories in years on this TV show, randomly.
Yep.
Fucking Legends.
and also, I mean, shout out, I mean also a shout out for giving like one of the characters, the main characters, like a gay romantic storyline.
Well,
and not just women, but actually two men. I mean, which I think is probably
the fact that they
one of the last sort of barriers for LGBTQ, you know, representation on shows.
Well, it's one of the things that Legends did that, like, even the Constantine TV show didn't quite do. mm-hmm. which is the Constantine is bi, and it gets mentioned and occasionally comes up in the comics. But, I mean, when he shows up in Legends, the first scene is like, well, he's kind of dating Gary sort of for a minute. Like, it's fine. Like, right after he's sleeping with Sarah. Like, this, it's John Constantine.
Yeah,
Deal with it.
Yeah.
But the fact that, like, this is the second time this season we have had, like, a same-gender kiss that kind of saves everything.
Yeah. Which I thought was...
Yeah, no, Legends is quite happily the queerest fucking superhero show on the market right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there's no, like, look at us! They're just doing it, and they don't care if anyone notices. They're just doing their show.
Exactly. Yeah, precisely. Yeah. There are no very special queer episodes. It's just, it's all queer all the time. They don't
care. Like, every episode, it would be a very special queer episode on the show.
Every episode would just be very special.
I mean, I even like the whole, in the episode before, you know, where they're doing the stupid little hijink of, like, I'm talking about this person, but you think I'm talking about Gary type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, you know, what about the man meat? And it's like, well, it's 2018, you know, it's exploring stuff. What? I'm not judging, like, who cares? I'm just like, what? What is the show?
Oh, I know. Oh, God. Oh, also, one of my favorite moments of this episode was a Gary moment. When Charlie is, like, got Gary's shape and runs into him.
Oh, God.
And she's like, I'm you from the future. But you better watch out, there's a shapeshifter around.
I know.
Jesus. And I'm like, oh my God, just pure, I mean, pure Gary, stealth yeah. MVP of Legends of Tomorrow.
I also did like when Charlie's trying to fix stuff and Keith's going back to look at all of the, like, well, who's dead this time? And sees mm-hmm. Gary, like, little monument there. It's like, eh, that's just, no, fine, we should fix it.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, and I just, and of course... And they also this the other thing this episode does from a character perspective
yeah.
is that it takes the two real sort of like characters around the outside, which is Charlie and Constantine, gives them a showcase, but also brings them into the fold by having them sort of learn that saving the team is more important than just fixing their own mistakes because. And sort of making them, sort of knitting them further into the show.
I'll give it to you for Charlie. That's not what Constantine learned.
Oh, okay.
Because Constantine was willing to actually just die.
That's true.
He had no problem with that. What he didn't want to do and still doesn't want to do is rope people into it.
Yes.
If anything, he learned that sometimes you can't stop people from being as bullheaded as you, and that might be okay. But it's Constantine that doesn't stick.
That's true.
Like, he might stick around with them, if only because, well, shit, they keep surviving me. But, like, yeah, I don't think you can change Constantine that much. He's like, yay, team! Like,
without breaking
him?
Not that much. Yeah, I agree. No, I mean, that's... Yeah, what I said applies much more to Charlie.
Again, the fact that they actually did... They knew exactly how far to go with it.
Yep.
That they didn't push it too far. Was kind of fascinating in and of itself, right? Like, these are people who deeply know these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And are writing to them. And again, it's the thing of you know, because if Legends was just silly, we wouldn't like it. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
If it was just goofy, it'd be like, yeah, it's cute. Okay. You know, it'd be like Psych, frankly. That thing that you watch sometimes and you're like, okay, it's fine, it's there, it's enjoyable. Yeah. But it's not afraid to go dark. It's not afraid to actually dig in and deal with actual character issues.
This is true.
You know what we're going to have to reference, right?
What's that?
Farscape.
Oh, yes.
Think of the comedy episodes of Farscape that did exactly what this is doing.
Hmm.
And actually, the better reference for this, though, because... One of the creators of this other show, works for Legends, is Chuck.
Right.
Which did that same sort of thing. You know, we could do high comedy, but also we're going to ground it in sometimes this life sucks.
Nope, that's an accurate way of looking at it.
Yeah. So, no, Legends is as much as I love, you know, Supergirl and like the weird places the season is going, and I still like Flash a whole lot, especially this season, actually, has been, I think, the best season since the first. And, you know, I've actually enjoyed the season of Arrow, and I love the crossovers, and, you know, Black Lightning's fantastic. Legend is the best thing that they are doing.
It just is.
Yeah, I wish they would get the ratings to back that up. Like, I wish the rest of the world would recognize it. But I feel like after this season, they're going to start to.
I hope so.
Because, you know, the first season wasn't great, and everyone kind of wrote it off.
Yeah. I almost want to go back and look at the first season, but I'm not that much of a masochist.
I feel like I will eventually.
Yeah.
But
I just want to take a look, sort of just peek and say, oh, yep.
You can see hints of it. Like, I remember in the first episode, there were hints of this.
Oh, yeah. No, there was enough to keep me going, but never,
they didn't lean in until season three.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so season three was just where they said, oh, screw it, now we know what we're doing.
Right. Also, God, how funny was that, like, we're going to do the unicorn thing again, and just the, we screwed it up for the more magical, and there's the unicorn, and they just fly in and just, it explodes.
Oh my God,
that might have actually gotten just, like, the single biggest, like, no bracing for the moment laugh of the fucking episode for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it was just so unexpectedly just, what the shit just happened?
Yes.
Oh, fucking Legends. Jesus. So, again, the lesson of Legends, I'm going to do a segue here. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. The lesson of Legends, of course, is that you need to embrace the comic bookness of it all as hard as possible. Right, like, that's the thing that made these things endure, is the fact that they can do the comedy and the humor. Right, you need to just do a comic book and have fun with it.
I have no idea where this yeah. is going.
which leads us right into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, that. Yes. Yes, indeed. What did you think of Into the Spider-Verse?
Well, I'm gonna make a claim I made yesterday on Twitter. The Into the Spider-Verse does for animation what Speed Racer did for live action. And I only hope that people actually learn from it this time instead of ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will. But, this was some... Just visually, ignoring everything else for a minute. Just visually, this was nothing else that has ever been done.
I'm not even sure how they made that film. Like, how they did the animation.
I know some of the tricks they used. They reduced the frame rate.
I noticed that, and it's funny because you can see it. It's actually in the first major scene. You can see it, and it's hard to watch because your eye is not quite used to it. And then as the movie goes on, actually your brain just adjusts to it.
Yeah, but it gives it that quality of stop motion.
Yeah.
But it's not. And then they did some weird layer disconnects.
Oh, yes.
So that, and like blurring and outline artifacts and Bende dots for texture.
Yes, yes.
That all ended up, like, apparently there's a 3D release of this. I don't know why you would need it.
I saw the 3D version.
Really? Because I'm almost curious, because the 2D version was 3D.
Yeah, that was the thing. I was watching, and I'm like, the out of focus areas are actually split image parts, like you're watching, like you're seeing a 3D movie without your glasses.
Right, and certain characters had like colored halos at time, like you were watching a 3D movie without the glasses. You know.
Yeah, it was really weird because at the same time it was in 3D, and I'm like, this is bizarre.
Yeah, no, you should go see it in 2D because
I want you.
I'll tell you something, though. The end credits, at least in 2D, almost made me motion sick.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had three background layers moving in two different directions, and then the text moving.
Yeah.
And it was just, the layers were so separated, I was just like, oh God, I can't look directly at this.
Yeah. No, I think I had to sort of, like, dip my head at that point, because it was just bizarre. It was
stunning fucking work.
Yeah.
You know, every character from a different universe has their own set of textures and color palettes.
Mm-hmm.
It just, Jesus.
Yeah, and I mean, they just, and they keep it all up at this breakneck pace that some, you don't, so that, like, they just keep on slamming new sort of, like, looks at you, so you just kind of go with it.
Right, your brain just adds to it and keeps moving, you're not concerned.
Yeah, exactly. But, woof, yeah, yeah, it was like a just a sensory experience, that that film. And that I was just not prepared for it. And I'd heard that it was a whole thing, but I'm like, you know, how much of a whole thing could it be? Well, it could be a lot of a whole thing.
Right. I mean, it's like, you know, you see the trailers and you're like, okay, great. But yeah, you're not ready for this.
No.
And again, story-wise, I think they did an incredibly interesting job.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had a huge cast. Yeah. They hard-focused on 3 of the 6 Spider people, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They still gave you fun bits with the other 3, but they really hard focused on 3 of them. And even within that big of a group and everything going on, they still managed to make it one character's movie. Like, definably.
Yes, yeah. That was a... I thought... Actually, it was funny, because when I went to a party last night, a friend of mine was there. He's a screenwriter. And he's actually decided that he's going for a meeting in Los Angeles next week to sort of talk about projects. And so to get ready for it, he's watching a bunch of... He's not really familiar with Marvel very much. So he's watching a bunch of the Marvel movies. He's watching the Hulk movie right now.
Right.
And I said, go see Into the Spider-Verse. Because they basically... It's a triumph of, like, efficient and, like, incredible screenwriting that manages to pack in all kinds of action, all kinds of characters, but give you storylines for, like, for all the important people and still make it about one person all at the same time. It is just, it just works in a way that so few superhero movies do nowadays.
Right.
I say.
Oh, sorry, just dealing with something else. Day's getting interesting. Anyway, I'll explain later. But, I need to see it again. Like, that's just...
Yep.
Like I said, it hit me like Speed Racer, in that, like... And you know, again, I love that movie, but, like, Speed Racer did, for live action, that thing of, like, this is a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how you can do this. And Spider-Verse, with the... Sometimes we're having, like, captions on the screen, or sound effects, or whatever. It's just, like, they took everything possible from, like... I think what it is they took the visual language of comics, the visual language of live action, the visual language of traditional animation, 3D animation, and claymation, and were like, why don't we just do them all? I'm just like, holy shit!
Yeah, that's kind of what they did.
And now, to be fair, they have announced 2 sequels, if you haven't heard about this.
There's one, I think there's a Spider-Woman sequel with
right, there's a Gwen-specific, Gwen leading a team of Spider-Women, including Jessica Drew and Cindy Moon, who's Silk.
Okay.
If you don't know Cindy Moon, she was bitten by the same spider that bit Peter.
Oh.
And then kind of hidden away for years.
Oh.
So,
I mean, I knew that the character existed, but I didn't know anything about her. So
yeah, it's actually kind of funny, because there's this ongoing joke that, like, her and Peter, because of the whole spider thing, have these, like, ultra compatible pheromones, so they can't be in the same room together because they just start tearing each other's clothes off. It's a problem, like, and it's played for a joke, you know. But Cindy Moon is a great character, and I really hope that this ups her visual in the fandom. And Jessica Drew, of course, the original Spider-Woman. I was confused. Mm-hmm. I think they wrote this before the change happened at Marvel.
That
they introduced Gwen as Spider-Woman instead of Ghost Spider, because they've been making that shift.
Right.
But we'll get the shift in the next movie. But also there will be a Spider-Verse sequel starring Miles that will co-star Gwen.
I figured. I thought to myself, they can't not have her and Miles together.
But it will probably also at this point have Spider-Man 2099, who, you know, in the post-credit thing. and that was fucking amazing. My guess is it will also have Spider-Punk.
Oh.
Just because he's become so popular. Now, the big hope, however, is that there's a new character, Spider-Man. Have you heard about Spider-Man?
I have not heard about Spider-Man, but this sounds
okay.
Great.
There is a character now called Spider-Man, which is a group of like 1,000 or so spiders that, like, because of radiation and the whole Peter Parker thing, think that they are Peter Parker and fill a Spider-Man suit.
Oh, so it's Swamp Thing, essentially.
Oh, it's Swarm, like it's, yeah, the Nazi bee villain, but right, with spiders, and it calls itself Spider-Man. And it might be the funniest fucking thing that they've done in a while. So yeah, I mean, expect more of that, you know, like that kind of madness. I just, yeah, this is, you know, someone else pointed out that, like, really what people need to take away from this, though, is not, let's apply this technology exactly, but let's do more superhero movies where we push the palettes, we push the visuals to be appropriate for the characters.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like an animated Iron Man movie should not look like Spider-Verse, but it should be as groundbreaking. Just in a completely different way.
Yep.
Like, let's stop being afraid of comic books. And that's the thing, is they embrace the comic bookness. This is, like, the best Spider-Man thing ever, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many small touches that, I mean, just make it work so well. Like, the like when we talk about, like, the captions coming up.
Yeah.
After the spider changes start taking hold in him, his thoughts become the captions pop up as his thoughts. So it's like he's becoming more of like a cartoon, like more of a comic book character as he changes. And I'm like, this is fucking brilliant.
Right.
Like, it's way to figure out, like, just like, holy shit, they figured out how this all kind of works, and they're just putting on the screen.
Although, I'll tell you, the movie, I had a moment where it was like a dagger to the heart for making me feel old.
Okay.
When you see Peter's grave, that Peter, who, by the way, was played by Chris Pine.
Oh, I did
geniusly.
Not know
what you were... Okay. And I'm pretty sure that the blonde thing was a joke off of Ben Reilly.
Oh,
who,
okay.
You know, in the original, like, the whole we're going to replace Peter with this clone thing, Ben Reilly was blonde.
Right. Okay. I knew there was something, but I did not know what. Okay.
But here's, I just got, because you see his fucking gravestone, and it says 1991 to 2018.
Jesus.
And I was just like, motherfucker, no, come on. And it wasn't until we get, like, you know, Nick Miller Spider-Man. Then I was like, okay, I feel better. Because this, and the joke is when you see the universes, when they're like, oh, we're combining all these universes, they actually give them the Marvel numbers, and 616 being the main Marvel universe,
right,
is that Spider-Man. So that's like the main Spider-Man. And it's like, okay, good. Like, he's older. I feel better now. Like, add 20 years to him, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Also referencing the dance from Spider-Man 3.
Oh, yeah. Everything.
I also did this.
It's like, well, I love that they managed to reference all the McGuire stuff, but change it all.
Yeah.
Like, he does that as Spider-Man. In the diner thing, when the car comes through, he's Spider-Man, not Peter Parker.
Right.
You know, the Mary Jane kiss, except she's upside down. So it's like, exactly. It's not actually the McGuire stuff, but it's reminiscent.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you could say that they deliberately sort of tweaked things to show this isn't the exact same universe, but... So.
But it's familiar enough you can keep moving.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and fucking Jake Johnson vocally is like... It kind of felt like when we got Mark Hamill's Joker, like, holy shit, he's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, older Spider-Man. You know, Tom Holland is an amazing live-action Spider-Man, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But just, if you ever need to voice, like, the, you know, I've done this for a while Spider-Man, yeah, that's Jake Johnson, isn't it?
Well, the funny thing was, I was like, oh, Jake Johnson makes great Spider-Man. And then I thought, I think this is actually Nick Miller as Spider-Man.
Okay, can I just tell you, if you go to geek.com.
Okay.
If you search for... Let me find it.
Oh, was this...
Spider-Nick? This was my article that I did off of the trailer, where I actually put forth the case that Nick Miller is Peter Parker.
You are correct.
And I am correct. I stand by this. Yeah, I just, Jesus, fuck this movie. This is one of those things that, like, we're going to be talking about for years, this movie.
Yeah.
Like, everything forward will actually be compared to this in some way or another.
Yeah.
Just writing-wise, character-wise, visually, it's just like, I hate to use the term game changer, but this actually did change it.
Yes. And also, I mean, this, you can see, like, there's some, like, people like Phil Lord and Christopher Miller were involved with this.
Yep.
Also, Rodney Rothman, and it's funny, because I've, like, Rothman's been writing stuff for years in various places. But Rodney Rothman also wrote one of my favorite ever comedy pieces. It was for McSweeney's. This was years ago. And it was how he tried to set up his own self-publishing empire by taking works
nice.
like in the public domain and then like just changing them. So he would like publish the Rodney Rothman King James Bible with strike through and double cap and like in all caps. And like the Rodney Rothman King James Bible or Rodney Rothman's Romeo and Juliet, where Mercutio is replaced by Ace Fireman Raleigh Fingers.
Oh.
But the thing was, they actually, the self-publishing services refused to publish them.
Nice.
They said, even this is a little too far for us. And one that was called Roller Coaster, which is just wee for like 200 pages.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Also, in marketing news, which I really do like, because, you know, the animation people were just like, we have to design all this stuff.
Mm.
So they designed a bunch of, you know, stuff. And Nike was like, we're making those sneakers.
Oh, yes.
They are called Origin Story.
Oh, nice.
They are apparently very expensive.
I'm also not surprised.
But, yeah, they are the Miles Morales sneakers.
Sweet.
And they launched the day of the release.
Mm-hmm.
Which is perfect.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I also do like that they kept, although weirdly in my head I almost wasn't expecting them to ever mention it, the Spider-Ham origin, that he was a spider bitten by a radioactive pig. Never forget.
They just dropped that and kept going. Oh my God. And like when he gives Miles his mallet.
Right.
It's like, here you go, it fits in your pocket.
Well, he's the cartoon.
What's
funny is the you know, like, how's that for cartoon? It's weirdly enough, they were, I don't think it was an intentional thing, because it's an obvious get, but mm-hmm. It reminded me of Morrison's Captain Carrot bit.
Oh, yeah.
Which I can't remember the line. I'm trying to remember it now. Oh, yeah. No, it's a whole bunch of people are like, you know, like, whatever, he's just this, like, you know, cartoon type of thing. And someone stomps him flat. And they're like, see, we've killed him. And he springs back up into normal form. And, like, punches him. He goes, who else wants to argue with cartoon physics? She's like, oh, shit. That's just a thing of beauty.
Right. Oh, also with this freaking movie, there were little kids in the audience. And, my God, that opening when essentially Kingpin punches Spider-Man to death.
Yeah.
Like, there are some very upset children.
Can we also just, like, besides other hints in the visuals, can we just give a huge shout-out to someone else besides, like, a bunch of comic people, I guess, absolutely loving Bill Sienkiewicz's old take on Kingpin?
Oh.
That's where that Kingpin design comes from. It's a Bill Sienkiewicz thing. That, as he said, he always felt that the feeling of a character mattered more.
Mm-hmm.
That you should express the feeling of a character visually.
And yeah, that's...
And just this huge, like, you know, this person doesn't even work in physical space. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, just, damn. But yeah, I was wondering, like, oh god, kids are going to have a moment with this. But that's, it works. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, no, Spider-Man dying shouldn't just be like, meh.
No, I know it had to land right, and it had to, and I thought they did as good a job as they could. But yeah, I loved all the care. I loved all the various Spider. I loved Nicolas Cage's Spider-Man Noir
with the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, he's like, is this purple? No.
But also, I think we have to give this shout out to just the overall message of the film, which actually goes all the way back to the beginning of Miles Morales, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not... You know, anyone can be Spider-Man. you know, right. obviously, you know, yes, Spider-Man has powers, but it's not even about that, right? Like, it's you take that leap of faith, you do what's right, you get back up. That's right. Spider-Man.
Yes.
And when they first announced Miles Morales, of course, there were a bunch of fucking racists who were like, you can't do Spider-Man, can't be black, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, but it's not Peter Parker. The Spider-Man can't be black. And they kept doing this, and they're like, you know, Stan Lee, if Stan Lee wants Spider-Man to be black. So someone asked him at a convention once, like, what do you think of this? He's like, it's great, because anyone can be Spider-Man. And it's like, there you go.
Yeah.
Like, this
up.
was a very Stan Lee feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even down to, like, his kind of, like, partially huckster, but partially, like, it always fits in that sense of that message, right?
Yes.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah, no, this paid really great, weird tribute to what Stan Lee meant when he did Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And what Spider-Man has always been, right? He's the everyday guy who just, he fucks up, but he gets back up.
Exactly. And it was funny when I was just reading an article on Vulture. .com.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, about Miles Morales, and the writer of the article quotes from novelist Walter Mosley, who's black, and Mosley said about Spider-Man was Mosley said the first black superhero is Spider-Man.
Right.
Lives in a one-parent house, has all this power, but every time he uses it, it turns against him, and you know the media is always trying to sort of like paint him as a criminal. And Mosley said, yeah, there's a black hero right there. So, and he said, of course, he's actually a white guy, but black people are reading Spider-Man are like, yep, I get it.
Right.
So actually having Spider-Man be an actual black and Latinx character makes
sense. Yeah, I mean,
sense.
And again, and this was Bendis's point when he created this character, was, okay, Spider-Man's supposed to be this, like, you know, low middle class income kid from like Queens or Brooklyn.
Yeah.
These days, the chances of that being a white kid are really slim in those
fair
neighborhoods.
Enough.
So, like, if you did Spider-Man today, he would not be a white boy. Like, that's just the way the world works. But that also, we're still going to have Peter Parker. And yes, he's like schlubby. He's been doing this for 20 years and he's tired and he's a little bit out of shape. And he's still really good at this. And he can still teach people. And, you know, he's not the focus and it's not his story. And it's not a white man savior thing. But he still has purpose. He's still capable. Like, they managed to just ride that line so well.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, I really do think. And, like, between this and having Gwen there and all, like, it really becomes this important movie for kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it has, and like a good Spider-Man story should, it has actual points. It has things to say.
Yes.
So I'm thinking, let's see. We're coming close to the hour mark, and I think I'm going to pull the ripcord a little bit early today.
Okay.
So
perhaps we were thinking of talking about the season of Who, but we could take it up for the next.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna be around on the 23rd, so you know.
Yeah, sure.
We can do like a you know, before we do like a whole big year wrap up thing, we can do like one last, because there's been nothing else going on really except for like that and Aquaman, so we'll be good.
Right. Oh right, Aquaman.
Aquaman.
I'm not sure if I'm going to be seeing that, but
I have heard so many good things. Can I just tell you, from people who hate the DC movies?
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, no, I'm in on this now.
Really? Okay then.
But if you don't, I can tell you about it next week.
Well, you know, you just made it sound a lot more appealing. So.
All right. Well, for now, we'll cue some music.
Yay!
Woo!